Anyway, it gives me great pleasure to welcome, he's actually from the University of Wollongong, originally in Australia. He's now back in this country, where he's a professor at Exeter University, and that's Chris Turney. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome to The Naked Scientist. If you don't know where Wollongong is, by the way, it's a wonderful little place just down the coast from Sydney, and I went surfing there. So, nice beaches, I have to say. So, any Australians living there, wonderful place. Chris, your work has largely been very exciting because you got to do things like date these hobbit people that were discovered a few years back. But probably a lot of people are wondering, you know, where does man come from? And could you possibly set the scene for us, telling us what the timeline is for the sort of evolution of people on Earth and where we all came from?
Yeah, sure, Chris. Essentially, the earliest remains of humans are in Africa, about 2.5, 2.3 million years ago. And that's a species called Homo habilis, or handyman. Anthropology is remarkably sexist, actually, so it's always man. But anyway, so Homo habilis was the first species of our genus. After that, it all gets a bit hazy. Traditionally, it was always thought that an offshoot of that was Homo erectus, erect man. And the traditional view was that Homo erectus, at some point, migrated out of Africa and settled across different parts of the world. In Asia, Peking man, Java man down in Indonesia. In Europe, he eventually evolved into Neanderthals. So that was a traditional view, and that's one of the views, and that's called the multi-regional hypothesis, which essentially is that these different species around the world evolved into us, Homo sapiens, with a little bit of romantic liaisons on the edge. I wouldn't say that's the widely accepted view now, but the more accepted view is the out-of-Africa hypothesis, which is that our species, which the earliest evidence around 200,000 years ago, evolved in Africa and then migrated out of Africa somewhere between 50,000 years to 100,000 years ago, and then moved out across the world and essentially displaced all these ancient species of humans.
So why do we think that's the case? Why have we changed our view that rather than people evolving in situ, they actually had to come out of Africa twice, if you like?
I mean, there's always evolution going on around the world all the time, but essentially our species looks like the earliest evidence in Africa and nothing broadly comparable. I mean, I guess really ultimately we'll come to that in a short while, but the Hobbit again is also evidence of out of Africa.
How do we know that magic date of 50,000 years ago, what's the evidence for that?
Well, really, it's constrained, really. We've got evidence of modern humans in Europe around 40,000 years ago, 55,000 to 40,000 years ago. Really, the sort of one of the linchpins is essentially Australia, actually. There's not a lot of evidence of modern humans between Africa and Australia. There's lots of stone tools, but there's very little modern human remains. A little bit in Borneo, but essentially it's in Australia. And Australia opens up all sorts of interesting angles because essentially, even during an ice age, when sea level drops at 120 metres, it's always been an island. So people must have actually built boats to get across in the early stages there, 50 to 60,000 years ago.
So people were building boats 50,000 years ago. I mean, that's really something, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I mean, we've got no direct evidence of it. And of course, the alternative is a pregnant woman on a mat of mat of rubble or vegetation mat or elephants swimming across with people on them. But I think basically boats are probably the more likely one.
So tell us about the colonisation of Australia, because that in itself is an interesting story, isn't it? Because people didn't know exactly when the first settlers arrived there, until you and your various techniques came along.
Well, it's been an interesting story, actually. If you went back to the 1960s, the earliest ages, based on radiocarbon dating, were essentially around 10,000 years ago. And over time, gradually, it's been pushed back and pushed back until about 10 years or nearly 20 years ago now, it was about 40,000. But there's a limit to radiocarbon dating, and 40,000 is traditionally quite close to how far back you can detect with that method. And then other methods came along, and they basically started coming up with ages of 50 and 60,000, and there was nothing close to that. So my research interest was really seeing if we could push back radiocarbon dating, and were those ages real artefacts of a method, or were real?
If we could just explore that a little bit, Chris, why is carbon dating restricted to those certain dates that you mentioned? Why can't it go on ad infinitum?
Well, it all comes really down to this quirky concept called the half-life, which essentially, if you, after a period of time, half of your radioactive element disappears. And so radioactive carbon, or C14, has a half-life of about 5,500 years. So every 5,500 years, you lose half. And after about 7 or 8 half-lives, you've essentially got very little left. So I guess the thing is, if you took a piece of coal, which is millions of years old, and you added to that carbon 1% of something from your body, modern carbon, you'd come up with an age of 37,000 years if you measured that. That doesn't mean the coal's 37,000 years, it's just how far back it can really date.
So how did you crack that nut?
A combination of things. In Australia in particular, Southeast Asia, probably across large parts of the world, early archaeological remains, a lot of the artefacts are found associated with charcoal, and charcoal's great. There's lots of it. They burn. It's a product of burning. And in many environments, it can survive for quite a long time. Problem is, it soaks up everything in the ground. If you've got smelly feet, use activated charcoal.
Oh, Kat knows all about that.
I'm not going to comment on that one. And it soaks up everything, makes your feet smell very nice. But if it sits in the ground for 40, 50,000 years, it can pick up a lot of contamination. So the method that we used was to clean up the carbon out of the charcoal. And then we had a special vacuum line where we basically heated up the charcoal, burnt off all the contamination and cleaned up the sample for dating.
And what did that show you about Australia?
Well, essentially, when we actually tested it out, intriguingly, some of the early sites became younger, some stayed the same age, but a few crucial ones actually became quite a bit older, and one of them got back to around 52,000 years.
So that says people were knocking around Australia. They must have had the capacity to get across water 50,000 years ago. But also, what about the climate then? Because obviously Australia is struggling now with not enough rainfall, Murray-Darling River's down to a trickle because so much is having to be taken out for irrigation. Was it always like that?
Australia swings backwards and forwards with aridity all the time. But essentially, this is pretty unusual what's happening at the moment. And we've been doing a lot of work out there trying to reconstruct the climate and trying to get a better handle on what's happened in the past.
What do you think has happened?
Oh, essentially, I think essentially we're in a lot of trouble, unfortunately. We're going to have to start doing something pretty seriously.
But if you look at, say, the timing of the arrival of people, because one of the things that Indigenous peoples in Australia have been doing for 40,000 years is burning stuff.
That's right.
So is there any evidence that they have brought about any of the change that you see in Australia?
Well, some people have argued that. Yes, we've done a lot of dating and looking at reconstructions, what vegetation was like. And there does seem to be a coincidence between changes in vegetation, at least in northeast Australia, and burning. So some people have argued that actually human arrival, catastrophic collapse of vegetation, and effectively the Australian monsoon collapsed and it dried out. I think other people disagree with that view. So it's an interesting debate going on at the moment.
And if we could just turn finally to the Hobbit story, which was kind of really exciting a few years ago. How do these Hobbit, these little people, fit into this whole picture of the colonisation of Australia and what else is going on around the world at the same time?
Oh, that was great fun. That really was. But we were basically interested in trying to work out when Homo erectus died out across Indonesia. And one of the early sites that we were interested in was led by a colleague, Mike Morwood, at University of Wollongong. And Mike was interested in the island of Flores, and working with Indonesian colleagues, went back to one of the key sites that had been excavated before. And there'd been burials found in the surface and lots of stone tools. And essentially, when they were digging down there looking for Homo erectus, they came across an entirely new species of human, Homo florentiensis.
And so there's been various arguments about whether it really is genuinely a new species or not. I've heard people say, oh, it's just a pygmy or something like that. How do we know that it is genuinely a new species, an offshoot?
Well, there's been quite a lot of evidence now presented with the shape of the skull, the actual shape of the whole skeleton, actually, the shoulder blades, the pelvis, the feet, the wrist bones more recently, and the brain size as well. Typically, if you look at the history of science as well, whenever a new species of human is discovered, there's usually some question about whether it's a diseased individual. When the first Neanderthal was found, someone claimed it was a giant bear. Another person was a Mongolian Cossack, got lost chasing Napoleon back from Moscow in 1814. Another one said it was a child who suffered from rickets, got bashed overhead, and then struggled on through life with arthritis. So it's par for the course, really.
But just looking very briefly at the timeline, Chris, how many years were the Hobbit people around on Earth?
Well, some of their traits are remarkably ancient, possibly 2 million years or so. They certainly arrived on Flores by about 1 million years ago, and the most recent evidence we've got is 13,000. But there's some tantalising stories from the locals, Ibu Gogo, the ancestor who eats everything, and the locals insist that they arrived in the island just before the Dutch turned up, just a couple of hundred years ago. So, mind-blowingly, there might have been another species of human on the island.
Thank you very much, Chris Turney. He's from the University of Exeter. He's here in the studio. If you'd like to ask him any questions on The Naked Scientist with Dr. Chris and Dr. Kat, you can email chris@thenakedscientist.com.
The Naked Scientists. For more information, get online at nakedscientists.com.
It's The Naked Scientist with Dr. Chris and Dr. Cat. We're talking about mankind's origins this week, and we're also doing a kitchen science experiment where you light a candle, wait till the wick is glowing red, you blow it out, and then you bring a lighter or a match very close to the wick but not touching it and see what happens. We've heard from Catherine. She is from Ashwell. She's definitely on the right lines. And also Keith in Watford's got in touch and he's on the right lines too. Tell us what happens. Chris at thenakedscientist.com.
And talking of fire...